This is Peter Noah, writer of number 81, Gaia. You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Welcome to The Blacklist Exposed. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Special Agent Chris Mao, reminding you that if you go behind your partner's back, it won't end well. Take note, Aaron. Thanks for joining us this week as we discuss episode number 81 on The Blacklist, Gaia, which aired October 13th, 2016. It was directed by Bill Rowe and written by Peter Noah. Show notes and the other intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com.
So Aaron is away today, Chris. He went out into the wooded mountains for a hike. I think he went to go find Kaplan.
Yeah, I think, you know, he did. He's out there trying to do that, so that's good.
Hopefully he doesn't get chained up as well.
Yeah, I'm waiting for James Caan to show up and chain him to the bed with
it would be awesome.
Yeah, it would be great. So,
all right, so we got Chris here from the Blue Box Cafe. If you guys remember back in season two, we had a live viewing party for the finale, and Chris was so kind enough to let us use his place. So as a return favor, I said, hey, sometime we got to have you on the show. So Chris, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and about the Blue Box?
Well, absolutely. My name is Chris Mao. I am, obviously I'm doing this podcast, but I'm a podcaster as well on the Southgate Media Group Network. Do a bunch of shows, one called This Week in Geek, other called Real Idiots, where we do a few different things. And I happen to own the Blue Box Cafe, which is a Doctor Who themed cafe in Elgin, Illinois. We're a small independently owned cafe. We play a lot of Doctor Who, but we love all things geeky and TV here. And that's what we do. And I'm the owner with my wife, and we have a great time. We've been open about 2.5 years, and we just keep rolling and doing stuff. So that's what we do.
That's awesome. And it's a great place. Enjoy the food. We were out there for a marathon recently with the Southgate Media Group folks, and it's just always great to have Southgate Media and Golden Spiral always partnering up, which is fantastic.
Yep. Doing some collaborating. That's good. So
wish people would do more collaborating instead of yelling at each other this week on the show. Hey,
yes, exactly. Collaboration is good. Yelling is bad, as I like to look at it. So,
all right. Well, we asked you guys last week to answer our profiling question of the week, which was, why was Katarina so sad if Masha was safe?
So on Twitter, at Brenner, Kathleen says, because she wants more Wrestler 2. Hashtag more Wrestler season 4. who doesn't want more Wrestler? I think we're okay. And then Kylie Whitehead 24 said she realized that Constantine / Kirk would risk Masha's health to cure himself.
Oh, I know. That's the biggest thing. If you figure she might be his daughter, might not be his daughter, that's where it'll get interesting. We have to figure out, number one, is he the father or not? And is she in danger then? Or is she in danger from Reddington, too? You never know.
Absolutely correct. And then, as we see in the episode, is, you know, the baby in trouble. So,
all right. So over on Facebook, Douglas Bermgarner said, because like Red has said, the reason why Lizzie Masha is in danger isn't because of her association with Red, but because of who she is.
Yeah, Ben Parman said, maybe she is afraid of Kirk and knows what he is capable of, or she projects her own feelings into this picture. The crying of Katarina symbolizes the sadness and desperation of Masha.
I suppose, yeah, you could totally take that, like, because it's, remember, she's remembering it, right? It's not like this was actually a flashback.
Yes.
So I think she's projecting her own self onto her, so that's a good possibility. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a good point. So,
all right, Anita said she would like to run off with Red, but she doesn't want to take Masha away from Kirk.
Yeah, and then Kay Keaton said, I believe it was her aha moment that Masha would be the cure for Kirk or her future son if he was able to raise her to produce a son to cure him. And that moment, in writing her thoughts, she realized that Kirk would use Masha to save himself and that Masha was in danger, in my humble opinion.
Mm, very good possible.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a really good question. We always want to know, did she actually love Kirk? It sounds like she loves Kirk from the diary, but we still don't even know if the diary itself is real, right? Because if you think about it, if she was Russian, then it would be written with a P, right? Katerina Rostova would start with a P.
Yes.
So, and then instead of a reversed R. So I thought that was very interesting, very telling, unless it was just an oversight.
Or just, you know, maybe sometimes when you are in character and you're in a spy, you do have to immerse yourself in the culture that you are. And so maybe that's why they change it. But who knows?
Very sure, very sure. Marta said, the Katarina we see is a reflection of Liz's thoughts about the journal and the life of a spy. Believe the tears are a projection of Liz's emotions. We mentioned that. Longing to connect with her mother and the realization that her mother's circumstances means Liz's paternity is unclear.
And is it Arika VFC? Lizzie doesn't know it, but we know this. In Red's Cape May flashback / grief dream, Katarina says that she is death to her daughter. In the journal, Katarina says that Masha is everything, Katarina's entire life. She says that Red wants the three of them to disappear, and she asks, how can I do that to her? There's something left out. Yet between the words that makes Katarina cry, Liz, a board-certified psychologist and profiler, is picking up on that something by both words Katarina says and the way she says them.
That is very interesting. She says that Red wants the three of them to disappear and asks, how can I do that to her?
Uh-huh.
That's interesting. I wonder if that plays into what Linda says here, right? What if Masha has a twin that nobody knows about? Identical twins can feel each other, read each other's minds. Red asked Liz how she would feel if she found out she wasn't who she thought she was, or something like that. What do you take of the twin theory?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's all sorts of possibilities with this. I mean, I think there is something, and, you know, going back to some of the things that we have discussed, or you and I have discussed, and I know you floating out of that out here, when they say her, is Katarina referring to herself? Is he or is she referring to Liz? Or maybe, as we talked about, maybe Red was possibly a female in another life, or the previous life. So, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, obviously openness about that statement.
Yeah. Pronouns are a key in the messaging and how you deliver stuff on the show.
Absolutely. So, and they, you know, and John Bokenkamp does, I think he does a great job, very much like Stephen Moffat does, to go back to Doctor Who, unfortunately, of those little details that he throws in there, and those like little crumbs that he puts throughout his show that later on he can come and gather up. Because he's doing that. He did that. He's doing that a lot this year, from stuff from season one that he put out there and said, hey, maybe we can reel it back in. So I think there's a lot of that going.
Ron Davis said, for the same reason they showed Katarina and Masha see each other in a time traveling alternate universe. I always love Ron stuff.
Suzanne Hinkle Patterson says she realizes that Masha is safe from the disease, but that does not guarantee she will be safe from Kirk. She will be haunted for what she has that can be used to counter Kirk's illness. I think it may be a bit more complicated than what it appears on the surface. Perhaps a paternity issue or a fake diary. We shall see.
Mm-hmm. I still say the diary was planted. Lots of reasons from Patricia. The man she loved and married is not the man she thought he was. She has come to the realization that she has fallen for the enemy. She is questioning everything she believes in, or it could be postpartum depression.
Yeah, it could be. That's a good point, because there's a lot going on when you have a child. Anne says she realized Masha never really was safe.
Mm-hmm. And the thing we don't know yet, it too, was the diary itself. Like, where in the timeline is this? Is she, you know, Masha is a 4-year-old? Is Masha an infant? I mean, I think that comes into play too, to figure out where the timeline actually lands.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, it does. Things can be interpreted different ways. So,
mm-hmm. Caroline Alexander said she loves and misses Red and Masha, implying that Red already has Masha safe away from Kirk.
Yep. And again, that relates to the timeline issue. So that's good. And then Rory says, because she was finally able to finish reading Old Yeller. Because who didn't cry when Old Yeller got shot?
Oh, my gosh. Spoiler alert. Hello. Come on. Spoiler alert. Oh, thanks so much, as always, guys, for playing along on the interwebs. Chris, since you are the guest, what will be next week's question?
Next week's question will be, what will happen to Kaplan in the cabin?
With a K, in the cabin.
Yes.
Kaplan cabin.
Kaplan right. cabin.
With that, before Aram slams the door on this podcast, let's go ahead and get into this week's case profile. So So we have a helicopter pilot named Owen Ayers turned eco-terrorist. He's up next on the blacklist due to a bad run-in with some vented radioactive gas in his younger years. It causes him to pass on a genetic defect to his son, a rare disease that requires him to see a doctor who just happens to be the same one Kirk visits. Go figure. So when he's not pulling an entire bag of cotton out of his nose, he goes around killing people to let other people know how bad the environment is. His name is Gaia, and he wants revenge for his son. So, Chris, what do you think of this Gaia, the mother of goddess of the Earth, killing people rather than taking care of the Earth?
You know, I think it makes for a much better blacklister that he's killing people, other than kind of doing some eco-terrorist things or trying to bring things to light. So, you know, kind of without that suspense or you know, like, well, suspense is a good word, suspense of killing millions of people. Who's going to act that quickly on the things that he does? So, I mean, you know, I think it happens to be just a convenient, you know, we kind of talked a little bit about this before we got on air. Not that this was a bad episode, but this episode lacked some qualities that some of the other done. And I think we addressed that a little bit later on in the podcast. And I think it was just kind of a convenient plot device to make him be, to do that. So,
And the thing that's interesting here too, is it felt very season one-ish, right? Lizzie goes and she's breaking down the case with the team. She goes and sits with Red at some random location while he tells a little story to lead into the blacklister. And then the blacklister happens to tie into the overall arc in some way, shape, or form. So from a blacklist episode, it makes sense. It fits. But yes, for where we are in the narrative right now, I think is where people might have been a little bit off with this episode, because it just didn't seem like a season four episode. It seemed like we were back at the beginning.
Yeah, it absolutely does. But you know what? Every show needs always sometimes in their course, you know, especially after three or four, you know, in the third or fourth season, where you just need to readjust everything. And I think they had to set up some stuff with Tom. They had to set up some stuff with Kaplan. They set up some stuff with Red. And they just kind of, you know, the blacklister was almost just that filler in between that space that they did that. And not that it was bad. Like I said, I mean, I think there was some, there's always some good science and there's always some big threat that overrides everything. But I think that, you know, got to that, you know, they use that as that kind of filler and it filled in, you know, well, or it could have been just a leftover idea they had and said, hey, we need to write an episode. Let's put this in here. So, and that happens too, unfortunately.
It does. It does. I thought it was cool that Gaia rhymed with Maya, his wife. Thought that was cute.
It did. I mean, you know, and it kind of maybe shows his imbalance a little bit. You know, they did touch a lot of hot buttons, a lot of, you know, current hot buttons with things like with the, you know, the small living space and the Earth and all that stuff. So maybe it was just more of a social, you know, his nod to some of the things that are going on in society right now to make the show relevant to our timeline right now. So maybe, you know, who knows?
Yeah, I've heard of tiny houses. I've heard of the shipping crate villages, but I've never heard of a school bus being converted into a house.
Well, you know, they have, and it's actually pretty cool. I've actually seen a couple of them. And you know, it's obviously just something different, but yeah, that's one way to use something that this big metal thing that's been sitting there and use it as a house. So
I think it's a great idea, actually. I'm tired of paying taxes, and I know you're probably tired of paying taxes because we live here in the Chicago area. Holy cow.
I don't know how it would work here in Chicago because it gets a little cold, but in more moderate climates, I mean, you go to California, you see this kind of stuff all the time. People live in their motorhomes full time. They live on the beach. They live in, you know, beautiful country where, you know, we live next to expressways and, you know, power plants and things. So,
yeah, definitely interesting. All right. So let's get into characters, because that's pretty much the crux of the story, other than that Gaia has his son. Right. Owen's got his son who has a deformity, and you know, just feel bad for Skyler. Right. It was the name of the kid.
Yeah. Skyler. Yep.
And so at least we know that at the end of the day, he does care about his kid and his wife, because he calls him, says, hey, you got to get out of town. Something big's going down. So at least he still loves them. So he's not all bad, but just messed up in his motives.
Well, you know what I mean? A little bit, you know, he has these motives to come out and be like, oh, I'm going to try to save the Earth. His was about vengeance. At the end, it was very clear. His was like, they did something to me. I'm going to do something to them. And it wasn't like he was this all caring, all loving people, even though he did have, you know, he did care for his family. He didn't want to see them get hurt. The end was very much, they did this to me. I'm going to do this to them. End of the story. So,
yeah. No, it's not a great way to lead your life, but you got to do what you got to do, I suppose.
Yes.
All right, so let's get into the characters that we all sure. know and love. Music this week, we're going to go classical for a first time in a long while. Little Mozart was heard as we hear Adagio for violin and orchestra number 26 as Gaia waters his plants at a school bus before removing a huge bloody hanky from his nose. That was so awesome to start the show with. Thanks very much, guys.
Yes. Here we go. Here's some bloody snot. We're all set.
Just so. Kept going. It was like, is that ever going to stop? Oh, my gosh. Later we hear, again, Adagio in E major as Gaia's chopper crashes into a nearby forest while the kids scamper away from their football game. And then Bob Moses's Writing on the Wall plays behind the Aram and Samar conversation and the Tom and Liz fighting scene. And finally, let us not forget the awesome version of Rockabye Baby from Megan Boone herself.
Yeah, that was really awesome, actually.
And a little creepy at the same time.
Yeah, well, you know, that adds to the awesomeness, I think. Creepy is awesome.
Right. So let's start with Kaplan first, because she didn't have much of the episode until the very end. But it's probably best not to touch an open wound with a hand that was just licked by a dog that lives in the woods, wouldn't you say?
Well, you know what? I always thought that there were healing powers in dogs licking you. But yeah, no, I agree. Well, you know, and I thought it was like the dog was going to lick her because of the blood and was just kind of, you know, kind of going to chomp her. But I'm glad it wasn't that. So
that's exactly what I thought. I was like, dinner.
Yeah, no kidding. It's like, oh, there's blood, open wound. Let's go. So,
oh, my gosh. And then we find out she's chained up to the bed with Leon Rippey, of all people. Tell us about Leon Rippey. What do you know about him?
I just know that anytime I see him, he's going to play a messed up character. He always, you know, he never plays like the nice gentle guy. He always plays appears to be gentle and then gets wacky at the end. But he's one of those awesome character actors that you see always gets work because he is so, he's got such that chameleon, the look of him, you know, it can be that kind gentleman, but then could be that evil sadistic clown, you know, person the next minute. So
I'm starting to think that he's following me around because he was on Under the Dome as Owen, the farmer, and then he was on 11-22-63 as Harry Dunning. So every podcast I've done, Leon Rippey shows up. So I was excited. I was like, oh my gosh, it's Leon again.
Yeah, it's great when they bring those kind of character actors in when they, you know, when they can get them because he is really, really talented. Because I've heard interviews with him, and he is literally like the nicest guy. He's just this good old boy that loves to do whatever and be like that. And then he gets to play these creepy dudes. It's got to be great for him.
The thing that I loved about this was the men that did this, are they coming back for you, sweetheart? What do you take? What is his motives? What is he thinking he's going to do to Kaplan?
Yeah, well, number one, maybe he was just checking to see if he, you know, obviously there's something messed up because she is now chained to the bed. You know, maybe he's wanting her for himself because he's got this person he thinks he can control. Little does he know he's going to be in trouble when she gets some strength back. But, you know, maybe he's just in that weird obsessive feeling. Who knows? You know, a la Cloverfield Lane or, you know, or Misery. So I don't know.
And the thing with the chaining to the bed, it could be for her safety too, right? She had this horrific accident. Maybe you don't need to be walking around because you need to get your strength back. So maybe it was something just to help her heal. He could be a nice guy.
Yeah, a big chain like that. Just yeah, you'll feel better there for 200 years. Thanks. So,
well, I think the big thing, if people always go to the wrong side of the tracks immediately. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, he's chained up. It's a horrible situation. You know, there's got to be some hope in this universe still. Can there not be?
There can be. Well, I mean, I think they set the hope up when he's like, hey, I'll take care of you, sweetheart. We're going to get your strength back up. And then at the end, you wake up and you're chained to the bed. So,
hell no. The minute he said sweetheart, I was like, this dude is bad news.
Oh, yes. Well, not only does he ask, are you okay? But are the guys that did this to you coming back? I mean, come on. Who asked that question? You know, the proper response would be, hey, I'll keep you safe. Not, hey, are the guys that did this to you coming back so I can shoot them or do something? I don't know. So,
All right. People have been talking about why Red missed the shot to kill Kaplan. Did he miss on purpose? Did he hit a plate in her head from when her head was split open in an earlier thing? And I want to call attention to, there was one other person that Red did not finish the job on that also was shot in the face. You remember who that is, Chris?
I do not.
Ah, you remember back season 1, episode 9, one Anslow Garrick also had his face all melted off. And I'm wondering if this is going to be kind of that same situation. Will we see Kaplan actually come back now as a blacklister like Anslow Garrick because of what Red did to her?
Possibly. I mean, I don't know. Or maybe is she going to be devoted enough to try and come back? Who knows? You know, I think that's a good plot device that she comes back and does that, or maybe works against him, but not directly. I mean, maybe that could be, or she works alongside, you know. I think there's all sorts of possibilities with that path to be taken. So,
but first she's got to figure out a way to get more blood in her hand and then put it on the chain so the dog will chew through the chain so she can get escaped.
Absolutely. So, I mean, she's a creative lady. I think she can handle the chain okay once she gets back up. So, I mean, she could use her glasses. She's got all sorts of tools sitting right there.
Now, Dembe's our man, but bodyguard, bullet shooting with two hands, even though he's got one arm and a brace. But who knew that in a previous life, Dembe was a bowling coach?
Yes. It's amazing. He's a talented guy. And he's from, where's he from? Is it Nigeria? I can't remember the country, but you know, out in the middle of nowhere, you learned about bowling. It's awesome.
Yeah, all those days chained up in the basement, right, for the Mombasa cartel before he was found. He's got to do something to pass the time, I guess.
Exactly. Watch bowling on ESPN and figure it out. So, yes.
Oh, my gosh. It was so funny.
Well, I love his and it's just like that nonsense, you know, he just throws it out there. It's not even like, hey, anything good. He's just like, yeah, you need to keep your elbow tucked in for bowling. It's better. Okay. So,
yeah, and he does it just deadpan, right? No statement, no expression, no, hey, man, you're doing it wrong. You just keep your elbows tucked in.
Yeah, it's like he's reading the paper, looks up and says, hey, get off my lawn, and then goes back to reading the paper.
Wrestler this week, not much for him doing what he usually does, but Googling, yes, Aram's girlfriend in front of the lady that you took away from Aram and in front of the lady you actually slept with. I think he's got a womanizer problem.
Oh, he does. He's got the macho man mentality. I mean, he did have the one good thing where I kind of like that. I think they are a good team between the two of them. I think that they do make a good like FBI team, but he's obviously got some issues. So,
yeah, I looked her up. She's hot.
Yeah,
you just slept. You slept with the lady that you're telling the girls. What is wrong with you?
Well, he's hot too, so that's what, you know. He's like, hey, I got girls on Facebook looking after me, so that's okay.
Clearly, him and Samara are never hooking up again after this.
Well, you know, and I understand everyone has feelings, but Samara is not one person that I think would let these feelings get in her way, and that I don't like that path that they're taking with her. Even though she needs to show vulnerability, Samara is not that, to me, that person. But maybe she is. Who knows?
Cooper barks orders like a boss. This guy, yes, was amazing. Now, Cooper, pretty much standard run of the mill, but I have to ask you, with him putting the finger on the inner key to stop the rotors of the blade, is that something that is the right thing to do? Is it, like he said, yeah, you did your job, I did mine. Is this something that makes Cooper a good guy doing his job? Is it a bad guy thing? What do you think the mental mistake is of that?
Well, let me put it this way. I think when your job is to protect the country and you're talking about the possibility of millions of people dying, you push the button. And I understand Aram's theory is like, you know, Aram is the behind the scenes guy. He does the computers and does all that stuff. Hey, I don't know if I want to take somebody's life. I think it's been proven that Cooper is willing to make that call. And that's why he is in the position that he's in. So, I mean, I don't think it makes him a bad guy. I just think it makes him a man that has to make really tough decisions. And that's the one he made. So
I guess the question is it the right call? Could they not have figured out a way to land the chopper and then have Wrestler and Samar arrest him?
Yeah, there's a possibility, but when you're talking a minute, 60 seconds is not a lot of time. And I think it would be kind of cliche if they saved it 15 seconds before he was going to land. Do you know what I mean? So I think they just ended it, you know, almost wiped out some kids on the soccer field, and then we go forward from there. So
I was nervous, right? They decided, I see the chopper's coming down, the kids are looking up, and I wanted to be maybe going in a direction of, because Cooper decided to make that rash decision of pushing the button, that it actually wiped out the kids too. And then it would have been like some kind of repercussion for that decision.
Right.
That's what it seemed like they were playing up with. And then when the kids ran away and it didn't, it was like, oh, okay.
and then when they actually show the helicopter crash, it's behind, is it close by? Yes, but it's not in the field. It's behind some, you know, behind some trees, so they don't have to blow up the helicopter, you know, saving on the budget. So that's okay. You know, it would have been more ironic if it would have been like a school of fish, you know, like a like some endangered whales, like, or something.
Lands on an aquarium or something.
Yes.
or lands on the Botanic Gardens. That would have been funny.
That would have been funny. So, or you know, the irony would have been good for that. So.
Oh, what if it would have landed on his actual school bus?
Yes.
Took out your home, dude. Sorry about your tomatoes.
Yes, sorry about the tomatoes, buddy. So,
all right. Now, Cooper, this is interesting. He's talking to the team. It seems very season one, like nothing's ever happened. I have a question for you. When is Cooper and Liz going to have the conversation about faking her death? Because they haven't had it yet, and Cooper was pretty torn up about it with his eulogy speech.
You know, I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. I think Cooper has a lot of, you know, I think he understands that people need to do drastic things to protect themselves, even though they are friendly. I mean, think about all the things that Cooper has done in the first three seasons, just to either save himself or his life or his wife or all the things he's been through in his marriage. So I think he's a person that first and foremost understands that. And then he also uses, I mean, I don't want to say uses people, but he's a director. He has assets that he uses, even though he's close with these people. And I think that in his mind, he has some of that separation. So there's Liz that he cares about, but then there's Agent Keen or ex-Agent Keen that does a certain job, and then they go forward. So
let me pose this thought to you then. We always talked about how Kaplan was on the phone with somebody in the disco birthing nightclub before Red walked in, and that we postulated that potentially maybe she was on the phone with Wrestler, since Wrestler was on the scene first and didn't shed a tear when we realized that Liz was dead and just, you know, get away from the van, everybody back up. So I'm thinking that maybe the reason why the conversation hasn't happened is because maybe Cooper was now the one that Kaplan was talking to on the phone, and Cooper was in on it the whole time.
He could have been. I mean, you know, he's one of those, I was saying earlier, I think he would be capable of contemplating that scenario to save her, because I think he understands the position that she's in. So maybe he is on it. I think that's a good point and good observation.
Well, because it's the only reason I can explain why they haven't had a shouting match, right? If she's supposedly this daughter figure or father, he's the father figure to her. They had these conversations about, Liz, if you pull that trigger, you're going to be the agent that I didn't think you were, and all this stuff. And then he delivers that amazing eulogy speech.
Yes.
You would think he would be more upset about it than Samar is. And so they would have to have some kind of, you know, battle royale between the two of them. Like, you did this, you wrecked me, blah, 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 kind of heated conversation. And then they would hug it out and it'd all be fine. Because that's what we need him to do in order to keep the show moving. But at the same time, we haven't had that speech, so it leads me to believe that maybe Cooper was in on it the whole time.
Yeah, and maybe we'll see something play out, you know, in just a different story. Because I think, again, this was one of those episodes that just kind of, I think, is setting the table for the next three or four. You know, they do it, blah, blah, blah. This was what, number four this year? Mm-hmm. This was the fourth one. So, I mean, you know, they got to get up for the mid-season finale here pretty soon. So I think maybe that's just what it was.
All right. Well, we'll see if Cooper and Liz have a conversation or not. So just saying that some of us in the fan base are looking for that conversation. And if it's not there, the only explanation is that Cooper was in on it.
Right. Well, they're going to have to address that at some point, because that has been there. And I think that's very valid. I think that's a good point by you. So.
All right, Kirk, apparently he has a way to hack in a Skype call into a computer that was either given to her by the FBI or Red.
Yes.
Did you thought that was interesting? Like, all of a sudden, hey, look, Kirk's calling.
Yeah, it was a little convenient. It's like, oh, yeah, by the way, this is what I have for you. So, and if he can hack in, how can somebody not get back? And how stupid are Tom and his friends to not check that beyond that?
Right, exactly.
That was pretty, come on. Nobody just does it like that. It's so stupid.
By the way, Constantine is calling me right now. No,
just, is he?
Just kidding. Dr. Sebastian is the doctor and said Kirk has 6 months to live. So I know some people are getting a little bit tired of the fine baby Agnes storyline. So at least we know at a minimum 6 months from now, right about the end of season four, Agnes has to be found because Kirk will be dead.
Yes, hopefully. Hopefully sooner than that, but you know, you never know. It's good that they set that timeline. You know, at least they give it some kind of, you know, it's some kind of finality. So hopefully that won't go beyond that.
Yeah, because there's only so much cute baby Agnes we can take on FaceTime or Skype and video calls.
And crying Lizzie because of it is, it's not that it's not nice. It's not that it's great to see that side of her personality, but we don't need to see it every episode, and we need to get this over with. So,
agree. Now, if the girl is a genetic match and there is not a guarantee that she is, so here we got Sebastian telling Kirk that he doesn't even think that the granddaughter might be the granddaughter.
Right.
So is this a giant clue for you, Chris? Did you say, see?
Well, I think they leave that open because that's been the question since day one. Who is Liz's father? Who is Liz's mother? I mean, the mother's a little bit easier because, a woman has a baby. The baby comes out of you. Guess what? You're the mother. But you might not be either. It could be, was that in vitro? Whatever. I mean, you could be carrying someone else's baby. So what is the truth? And I think that's to keep that question alive makes it very tenuous. So.
Oh, so she's not a Rostova. She's a Romanov.
Right, exactly. But yeah, who knows? I mean, who knows what it is? Who knows? And that's the best part about this whole thing. We don't know. And then so they can eliminate to go back to like the Spock, if you eliminate all the other possibilities, then what you have left is the only possibility. So they can take care of that one at a time.
Very true, very true. Now, what will he do to Agnes? And what's up with the creepy henchman lady who only deals in facts and apparently affectionate touches?
Yeah, that's a little of all the things that happened this episode. That might be the weirdest, the weirdest one. Who knows? So I don't know. I just know that she's that, whether she's the love interest, whether she's the boss or, benefactor, who knows? It's just, it's very strange.
So at the end of last season, we see that he has kind of like a three-headed horseman running the, I guess, business or corporation or network or whatever he owns. We haven't seen this lady yet. Now she's coming into the picture. Do you think it is partner? Do you think it is just one of his corporation people trying to look out for his best interests?
I think there might be a relationship, but I don't think he can let himself give into that. I think because of the affectionate touches, I think there's some kind of interest, whether it be love in, like a relationship or some kind of, she's a relative of his in some way, shape or form, but I don't know. They don't look anything alike. They don't have anything in common that I know of. So, I think there's a lot of, again, mystery involved with that. And what's the point? So,
and see, these type of characters are really interesting because watching some other shows like Chuck or other spy kind of television shows, It could turn out that this ends up being a bigger character that we don't even see in this episode. Right.
Right.
And then she ends up, doing this thing. And then later on, we find out she's the mastermind behind the whole plan.
Yeah.
I love how they can set that up without saying so much.
Right. Well, is that touch like I own you and you are going to do this because you need to, you need to be there for me. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. That might be what it is. I don't know.
Yeah. So very interesting character. I'm interested to see if she pops up again.
Yep. It's that breadcrumb that they dropped that they can pick up later, or they can just let it go and be like, it was just a girl that was sitting there. So
sure. Sure. Somebody may be picked up off the street too. Who knows? Tom.
Yep. He does have some money, so he can do that.
He does. All of his assets are frozen though.
Yes.
Tom said, or should we call him Martell this week?
Yes.
So he tries to save the baby in the name of love for Liz while singing Rockabye Baby. Now, this non-marriage, remember, they're not married. They never said I do again at the altar, and they are technically divorced by law right at the start of season two. So
yes.
Do you think this non-marriage, this partnership, I don't think it's even going to get past these 8 episodes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why would you say that?
I have no idea.
There's nothing going on. Yes. It goes into they do this flip flop with Tom where they make him one episode like this unbelievably great guy that is, this, and then they automatically take the opposite side of the coin where they make him like the biggest idiot in the planet. And I don't want to say I'm tired of it, but I think that's kind of played out where how many times can this guy be redeemed and then mess up, be redeemed, mess up. And, I think, with what is coming, I think that having him do something else like what he does as a spy would be great because I'm tired of this kind of relationship going back and forth.
What's interesting is that when you look at his behavior and the way he goes from being awesome dad to I'm going to try to save it and do everything on my own without checking with you first. And then you have Liz last week being the whole I'm going to fake cry to do the whole, you know, Keen's 11, you know, heist sequence. Yes. And then you go back to this week where she's a little bit more weepy and she's confiding in Red again, very season one like. I'm at the point where I just don't understand what the point of their relationship is anymore. Because at one side, it's cool to see them actually working together, right? Everything's all hunky-dory and they're partners. Here, they're fighting again. Let's just have them be partners up until like the last episode, have one epic fight, and then send them off to the spinoff, you know?
Right.
So, all right, let's go on to Red. Go ahead. You have something else?
No, I was just saying, like, I think that, you know, I think they didn't know what, you know, how to set that table. And I think they just, you know, they're going to build, I think, with this instead of just being like, they work together. Hey, you need to leave. I think they're just going to give him, especially this whole season, every episode, another reason for her to want to split up.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens next week. Are they back to being friends again, being lovers, you know, one last goodbye, rock-a-bye in the boat kind of thing? Or
yes.
Is it going to be truly an epic build of another thing that I can't trust you on, another thing you failed me on? Right. It'll be great to see.
It'll be the end of season two boat scene, right? That was season two, right?
Yeah. The boats are rocking. No, don't come a knocking.
Exactly. Makes no sense. So.
All right. Red this week. Let's go to Red. Says to Dembe to call Elizabeth, not Agent Keen, not Lizzie, specifically says Elizabeth. So again, is this a thing that every time Red addresses Liz, the way he addresses her depends on how he feels about her or what the relationship status is between Red and Liz?
You know, I don't know. I think he runs the gambit of, you know, and I think it's hard to hold a continuity of what, you know, to set that mood, even though they're very particular about it. I think it is like what you were saying, that depending on how he feels, just like your parent, if your parent's mad at you, you know, my mother calls me Christopher when she's mad, doesn't call me Chris. So maybe that's why he said Elizabeth. Maybe that was to show that he's still angry at her. And then, you know, when they're together, he's always going to call her Lizzie. Yeah, I don't think has he ever not called her Lizzie when they're together alone?
That's a really good question. And that's kind of why I brought it up. So in the public facing, when not with Liz, it's Elizabeth or Agent Keen. Then when they're together, it seems like it's Lizzie, because then they're in the bus and talking about how, you know, maybe the child was dead. Right. And mm-hmm. Red picks up on that, tries to comfort her and calls her Lizzie at that moment in front of Dembe. So I guess the question is this a sign that Red has forgiven her for the deception of faking her death? Or do you feel it's too soon?
No, I don't think it's too soon. And of anybody in this entire cast or in this entire show that would understand that deception, it would be Red Reddington. You would think that. I think he could move on. Even, you know, he knows that she vacillates between trusting him and not trusting him. Why should she trust him? Even though that's probably what he wants most desperately in the world, is for Lizzie to absolutely trust him. He has to know that she doesn't have trust for him because of some of the things that he's done. So I think he can move past that. And I think he just gets into that father figure, whatever figure he believes he is to her. So,
all right. Sounds good. All right. So we meet with Maya and Skylar in the restaurant, and he says, do you have a child with special needs? And again, Red does that thing where he doesn't answer, but he answers with a story.
Yes.
And I have to ask. So the reason why I brought up the Katarina crying at the end of the episode last week question was there was a glimmer of me that kind of said, did the disease spread from the male to the female line? And maybe Masha has this disease. And so when this whole special needs thing came up, I'm wondering if there's something wrong with either, because we still don't know, right? If Red is Lizzie's father, then
correct.
Is there something wrong with Lizzie? And does that tie into the whole disease situation from last week? Or is it the original daughter that Red supposedly has that ends up dying in this mythical fire that we still don't know if actually happened or not on Christmas Eve?
Yes.
And did his child actually have special needs and it was actually a touching scene for him? What do you think?
Or could, I mean, exactly. I think there's all sorts of possibilities with that. Or does he have, like, Red has some spectrum tendencies on the way he acts about things. Maybe it could be him. Maybe it could be like when he was a child, they thought he was different because he's got some different skills. I mean, I don't know. I just really like that scene, you know, because of the way he dealt with Skylar. I thought that was really kind of cool how he really, at some moments, I mean, even though he has an ulterior motive, that he treats everybody very equally in some of these moments. That, to me, I think that's kind of cool.
It's showing a softer side of Red again. This is where they hook you back in, is the writer's room. They start to hook you back in and go, oh man, Red was so sweet with the boy. He's such a nice guy. And make you completely forget that he's a criminal, and they're going to backface you somewhere along the way, probably towards the end of the mid-season finale here.
Absolutely, that he still can be. I mean, I don't think he's ever not been a polite person or not been, you know, properly structured like that. But there's, yeah, obviously there's no doubt he's a killer and a crook. So.
And then they're sitting in the limo. Lizzie tells them about Sebastian Reifler, the doctor. We're getting close, Lizzie. It won't be long now. Please find Agnes next week.
Yes.
But then, of course, the scene that, well, not the scene that probably blew up the internet, because I think Samar and Aram did more of that personally for me. But he does reach over and holds Lizzie's hand in comfort. And then I think everybody blew up here, right? Is it the father holding her hand? Is it the lover for the shippers holding her hand? Is it is it the mother holding her hand? Or Aaron's theory, too. We'll throw Aaron's theory in. The uncle holding her hand. What did you think of the handhold sequence? Is this, are the back peas and carrots again?
No, I think there is no doubt that Red cares for Lizzie a lot in whatever capacity that is. And I think that's just, you know, I think it's more significant that he did it, that he is back to feeling like he can take care of her and that Lizzie will let him take care of her a little bit, than where it fits in the realm of his relationship with her. Do you know what I mean? I mean, we're going to have those doubts until they answer that question or give us some more. But, you know, the fact that he was able to hold her hand and that she let him, because there's distrust both ways, kind of maybe signified that their relationship has healed a little bit. So,
well, now take this and flip it to the Leon Rippey situation with Kaplan. Is this like maybe Stockholm syndrome in a way? Is he just keeping her at bay and trying to play into her emotions and making her feel like she's safe, but she's really not safe? I mean, we're told that it's because of who Lizzie is, not because of Reddington, that all this stuff is happening in her life. But yet Reddington's presence seems to keep putting her in constant danger, according to Kaplan.
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, anytime you're around a guy like Raymond Reddington with all that's going on, you're in danger. But I don't think she's ever not been in danger. I guess it's who's she in danger with. Talking about Liz, I think that's I don't know. To be honest with you, I haven't really thought that much about that part of it. But I know that that's, you know, that comes with the territory of being involved with Red or having Red involved in your life, that something's going to happen one way or the other. Something big.
All right, let's move on to Liz. Love the fact that she's breaking down the case and profiling like a boss, back to season one Liz, but confides in Raymond at the end. Again, to me, this seemed like it was a little bit early, or it was too easy for someone that literally masterminded this giant plan to get away from Red. And here, back in the car again, like, yeah, I need my mommy, daddy, uncle.
Yes, I need my whatever. I need my Red. You could call it just, I need my Red.
Well, they met up at the gravesite, right, at Elizabeth's grave, to have their first meeting post coming back to seeing each other. And they haven't really had their blow up yet either. If Red's willing to shoot Kaplan for her deception and her mistrust and not believing in him and whatever, then why wouldn't Red and Lizzie be having more of an epic battle about, how could you do that to me? You know, I suffered so much. You know, that I literally went to an opium den again because of you. They haven't had that real blow up match. And then here, again, Liz lies to Red about the video feed from Kirk and being in contact with him. So you think that he would say something about that, be a little more angry about that. Like, you deceived me once, you're deceiving me now, stop deceiving me, or you're going to get a bullet in your cheek.
Well, see, but I think the relationship between Kaplan and Red is much different than Liz and Red. Red is Liz's father figure or parent figure, where Kaplan works for Red, so I don't think there's ever been a time where Red has not said, you need to be loyal to me 100% as somebody who works for him. But, you know, with Liz, it's okay. It's like, Liz, yeah, I put you through the ringer. You know, I can understand why you did that, even though it hurts, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I think it's just that there's a there's a different relationship between those, you know, between Red and Liz and then Kaplan and Red. So,
but if he was a father, if he was the father or a father, you
yes.
assume he'd be a little bit more animated about it, right? So does that make us think now that he's not the father?
Well, he's a parent figure in some way, shape, or form. I think he might also understand, you know, put that stuff to rest. It's hard to understand because they go back and forth. Liz goes back and forth between being really, really mad at Red and then also needing the comfort that he provides her, because I think he's one of the few people on the planet that makes her feel safe at the same time. And I think that kind of wars within her. It's like, hey, I hate this guy for doing what he's done to me. But then there's also, he's maybe one of the only people on the planet that gives her that, you know, that feeling of security, like a father or parent or uncle or whatever mother could. So.
Gotcha. And then of course there was this great line from Liz. I thought I could make it better. I thought I could protect my baby. That's my one job, to protect her. I could make her feel safe at any cost, to hold her, to tell her everything is going to be okay. And that's when Red goes over and touches her hand.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, does that signify parental relationship at that moment?
Sure.
And more importantly, of course, my mother theory coming into play, because if that's exactly how Katerina felt, right? That was the one thing she had to do. She had to protect Masha, do everything she could, and make her feel safe at any cost. That was the key line there. So yes. The cost to Katerina potentially was her life, if yes. you believe she died, or it is still her life if you believe she had the sex change.
Yes.
But to hold her, to tell her everything's going to be okay, I think that's really powerful moment, a powerful scene that really sets up something that might be coming here before the season finale, mid-season finale.
I think that's when you brought that theory up and the first time I heard that, I completely bought into it, that it could be a possibility, because when he vehemently states, I am not your father, I believed when he said that. So maybe, you know, maybe he is, maybe he's the male figure in her life because of the situation with her biological father. But I think it's there. And I think that was a big foreshadow. Mm-hmm. So,
yes. And then they had the issue though, then now that you have the, who's the father paternity problem. Right. And if you believe the diary is real, then she supposedly was seducing Raymond. Now, of course, Raymond and the American, and we talked about that last week, are those two different people. And yes. We'll have to see how that all plays out. So very interesting, but really, really good line. Clearly planted in there to make us think about something. So watch that scene again. Very, very good. All right, we're going to move on to the last two. And I put these two last this week because I thought the conversations between them were the most interesting conversations of the episode, to be quite honest, except for maybe that final piece. But Samari, you never know where you stand with anyone and whether they will be there for you. Dude, it cuts to the core, man. You're saying that right to Aram. It's crazy.
Yes.
And then clearly pissy. She's clearly pissy about the girlfriend, right? So she does have some feelings for Aram.
Yes.
Okay. It's a good thing we
I think that's accurate, but again, you know, again, I don't think that I don't look at Samar having those kinds of feelings in this. I think she's able to separate it, but maybe this, you know, Aram was able to cut through that shield that she had and get to her. So I don't know.
Maybe for her, she's always got this defensive, or maybe she always gets what she wants, right? She's always the one in control. And when she's not in control, she doesn't know how to respond in that moment. Very much like the end of Zal Ben Hassan, right? Her brothers got turned over to Red. It's like, he's all yours. She has the little sniff moment, and then she hooks up with the wrestler. So she doesn't know how to respond, so she responds, you know, rashly, you know, makes a rash decision. And maybe this was a thing, too, where she didn't know how to respond with the fact that maybe Aram wouldn't be pining after her. She liked the chase. She liked being, you know, the number one in his eyes, and now that she's not number one, she doesn't know how to handle that. So she immediately just starts flying off the handle with the transfer, and, you know, you never know who's got your back, so that applies something against wrestler, too, at that moment.
Well, or could that be Red? Because it isn't the underlying reason that she's on this team is because Red wanted somebody that he knew inside the team or not?
Thank you. Yes. Hello.
Do we keep
forgetting that? I think people forgot about that, to be quite honest.
Every time I look at her, I'm like, that's Raymond Reddington's plant on the team. I mean, and he kind of abandoned her, did whatever. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe that's what she's saying. I that's what I always go back to on that when I think of her. So
interesting. Aram, always the joker. I love the unlivable versus unaffordable. line. I thought that was fantastic. I feel that way every day when I pay my taxes in Chicago.
Yes.
But I'm glad you're going. You can't go fast enough, and slams the door. Too harsh? Right on point? What do you think?
Well, I think it kind of goes to his seemingly inexperience in dealing with women in relationships with other people, where he just kind of acted like a child and said, that's it, I'm out of here, leave. Instead of being like, you know, because you knew that he was like, you know, that obviously is that plot device, like, should I tell her how I feel or should I not? Should I tell her, should I not? And then he just said, whatever, I'm mad, you can't go fast enough. You know, like, you know, saying what you don't mean, saying the opposite of what you mean because you're pissed. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think this was a very good point here to bring up, because the whole time they were standing there, I thought maybe this was going to be it. We're finally going to see them hook up. They're going to kiss. They're going to whatever. You're building. And then the complete opposite happens. That's the Blacklist I love, when you have that expectation of what's going to happen and then it doesn't. That's the stuff we need to see. The rest of the episode was, it's kind of like Frederick Barnes, right? The guy that was experimenting on the human population back in season one, killing people to find the cure for his son. It's a very similar storyline, kind of rehashed. So I think that's where it was, you know, have we seen this before? Does it feel like, yeah. And so the episode kind of felt like filler in a way, like you said, setting stuff up for maybe the next four.
Sure.
But then you get a scene like this and you're like, yes, this is the Blacklist that I want. I want to see the unexpected stuff happen.
Yeah. And you want to see these people work closely together, and they work it's a high tension situation. So drastic things are going to happen all the time, where, you know, you're doing this, you're in battle with people, you fall in love with them, or you feel like you fall in love, or you have these strong emotions, and then they're going to do something that's going to rip your heart out. And there's got to be a lot of that, and we don't see much of it, or they kind of gloss over it. I mean, the wrestler Liz kind of thing, because there was that moment there where you thought that they might hook up, and then, you know, that all gets shattered. Was that season two?
Yeah.
That was season two, right? So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of that stuff where, you know, and then, you know, he has a problem with his wife, girlfriend. It was girlfriend, right? Mm-hmm. Or was it wife? And then fiance becomes addicted to drugs. I mean, it was very much 24-ish when, you know, like, oh, we cured that in a day. But, you know, there's these dramatic things that happen very quickly. And again, without knowing the timeline of what is going on, you know, in terms of real life, is it months? Is it days? Is it hours in between these episodes? You know, it's hard to get a gauge of how that flows with them. But I think in those high tension situations, there's a lot of, you know, your emotions can go back and forth, especially Aram, who is not, although he's a very talented and very smart man, very good at what he does, I don't think his strength is having that emotional cutoff. Like, it's obviously that Samar has, obviously wrestler has it, where I'm doing my job, I can do it, I can kill somebody, I can do it, and then I'm going to have my real side where I have emotions. So I think, you know, Aram is that blurred in between too.
And do you think she was poking the bear when she's like, you didn't do your job today, right? You could have cost people lives by your indecision. Do you think she was poking the bear, or do you think she really felt that?
No, I don't think she felt that. I think it was poking the bear. I think she was just acting out on, you know, she's hurt. She doesn't know what to do. She's mad at Aram for whatever reason, whether it's girlfriend or whether she just doesn't know how to deal with those feelings. And then, you know, that's, you know, she's like, instead of, I don't know what else to do, I'm just going to jab, because that's what she is. She's a fighter. I think she's proven that that's what she does. Her response is take action. So.
All right. So overall, total score on the episode, what do you think? 8, 6, where are you landing?
I go 7 or 8. I think it was, there was decent parts. Again, especially the things that you brought up about like the current season style stuff. I think it was good. I just, you know, I think it could have been better. It wasn't a home run, but it was probably a good single or double. So.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah. I'm about the same. Probably leaning more like a single, because it was like a rehashed storyline. It was very much Frederick Barnes, very much felt season one. It was kind of like, oh, and it just happens to be the doctor that goes to Kirk, right?
Yes.
So it was very, very convenient, I think, is the best way to say it for this episode. So it does move the story forward, which is good. You know, it's not like we're stalled or anything. It does add a little bit of an element. But the concept of we need to find Agnes and, oh, Kirk escaped again. That's, for me, is getting a little bit old at this point. So I think yes. that has to be resolved fairly quickly. And I know they're trying to beat up, you know, be on a beat to 8 episodes before football takes over. And so they do have to plan it out that way. But this is that what we talk about, that problem with 22 episode seasons. If they mm-hmm. could just, you know, keep it, you know, 16 with an 8 and 8 split or kind of thing, or a 13 episode, you know, I think the long form 22 episode content concept is not long in the tooth anymore, let's say.
People don't have that time to invest, and it's a lot of production. And I do, like you're saying, I like that shorter format, because you get in and get out, and then you can pack a lot more into it. The show is not over, so don't go anywhere. But please remember to download the Blacklist Exposed app for Android and Apple and iOS, and be sure to go even deeper into the mystery of Red Reddington by visiting our partner Blacklist site, theblacklistnbc.com. We'll be back with Red's Rhetoric right after this.
What if you could live your life without limits, where every desire you ever imagined could be fulfilled? This fall, experience Westworld, a show where every human's dark side will be revealed. After watching each episode, listen to Beyond Westworld, a podcast featuring humans and hosts from around the park diving deep into HBO's illustrative narrative. Every hero has a code, and so do you. Download your itinerary and the show at beyondwestworldpodcast.com or your podcast app of choice.
Welcome to Red's Rhetoric, that part of the show where we play two scenes from this week's episode, and then you get to vote which you think is the best one over at theblacklistexposed.com. Just look for the post for Gaia. Last week, 74% of you said that you would inject yourself with leukemia to save your own life, or maybe you just like the clip. Either way, our first clip comes from when Red and Liz chat about bull sharks.
Some years ago, I had a rather awkward encounter with a bull shark while diving off the Great Barrier Reef. I actually think it was trying to be affectionate, even a little forward. But the net result was excruciating. But I did spend a glorious month submitting to the healing hands of an utterly divine lighthouse keeper on Bramble Cay, a low-lying island that's rapidly being submerged by rising sea levels due to climate change.
Climate change.
Our next blacklister is devoted to protecting the Earth from the greatest threat to its existence as we know it, us. He's a stealth eco-terrorist known only as Gaia. Earth Mother in Greek mythology.
Okay, so the connection between this Earth Mother and Agnes is what?
What is not relevant, only where. We must find this man, unless you have a better lead on Kirk, as he reached out to you.
No, he hasn't.
Our second clip comes when Red has a sweet treat with Skylar.
That's all you want? To meet with Sky's doctor?
His hematologist, yes.
Do you have a child with special needs?
Picasso said it took 4 years to paint like Raphael, but a lifetime to paint like a child. They live in a delightful space somewhere between dreams and reality. Taste color, hear shapes, see sounds. We should all have such special needs. There is a child. Her life hangs in the balance. I believe Skylar's doctor could save her.
Which was your favorite this week? If you would like to have the touch of healing hands from a lighthouse keeper, vote Red Shark. If you believe we all should have special needs, then vote Red Picasso.
Now let's see what all you special agents thought of this week's episode. Bill Steffen said, underwhelmed, recycling blacklisters and methods of attack. Come on. And then Bill also added after that, thank God for Jelly Bean. And I would say, yes, thank God for Jelly Bean. Jelly Bean's awesome.
Yeah, the bowling scene definitely helped make this episode.
Well, he's great. Whenever he shows up, he's great because he is Red's foil. He's awesome because he keeps Red in line. So
yeah, Ron actually agreed. The scenes with Red and Jelly Bean were priceless. So I love seeing Glenn. It just lights up my entire evening.
Yeah, he's fantastic. So Crystal added, I really liked the bowling alley scene for sure. And the wonderful moment when Red Red and Skylar was absolutely beautiful. I just really wish the whole first half was as good as the last 15 minutes. I completely agree, Crystal. I just thought I should add the Blacklister should be kind of okay with what Cooper did pushing the button since it was the Blacklister's MO. And it's okay to kill someone to save thousands.
Ah, very good point, Crystal. I like that.
yeah, don't use my methods against me. How dare you?
That's not cool. Maricel said, "Oh, Mr. Kaplan, hasn't that poor woman been through enough? Well, at least these things are somewhat going back to normal on the Blacklist procedural-wise." A lot of people like the procedural concepts. My favorite part had to be during the last 10 minutes or so when everyone is telling each other off. Aram setting Samar straight, Liz telling Tom a thing or two about his screw-up, all riveting stuff. And man, when you'd think Red would be a lot colder to Lizzie after what she's done, but Red just can't help himself. He has a huge soft spot for Elizabeth Keene. I wonder if Liz is ever going to manipulate Red's softness to her advantage.
That's an awesome point.
I love
that's a
that
very
idea.
Interesting thing. But she always talks about that, but Liz never can because Liz is inherently good. Even though she does bad stuff, she is still the young woman that wants to be needed, I think. So, I don't know. Deborah Jean says, "I honestly think Kaplan Savior is going to be a cannibal. He needs to feed her, fatten her up." Yeah, LOL.
Hansel and Gretel, here we come.
Yes. Where's the oven? Deborah also adds, "Poor Aram. He said everything he didn't mean because Samar said everything she didn't mean. I wish people would just say how they feel. Instead, they hold it in and blurt out crap they later regret. Poor Liz breaking down just like Katarina in Cape May. Poor Red having to see that play out twice. But hey, next week looks like we got our daddy reveal. So there's that."
No, we didn't get anything. Nobody watched the promos. We've told people, don't watch the promos.
Yes. There's nothing going on.
It will just ruin the show for you.
Yeah, well, they'll say it. It's not going to happen. You know it's not going to happen. So why even bother?
Right, exactly. I love the contrast, though. Katarina breaking down in Cape May and then Red having to see it play out twice. I didn't actually pick up on that initially. I like that observation. Thank you so much, Deborah, for sending that in.
And if it goes back to where we think that Red is Katarina, then he has to relive what she did earlier in his daughter. That would freak you out completely.
Totally freak you out. Agree. Linda said, "My randoms. Number one, brain screamed misery."
Yes.
It would be really sad if that storyline plays out. As long as that book movie did, I will hate it. I think we all will too, because Kaplan's been through enough. Number two, guns around a natural gas pipeline substation. Why?
Yes. Hello.
Don't shoot that off here. Number three, Kaplan's keeper referred to the man that did this to you. Why did he say it was a man? Was he watching?
Yes.
All right. Samar being a smart cookie. I don't care why, and I love it. I love the way she's acting. Interesting. A lot of people would be like, Samar's just a B-I-T-C-H this week. Number five, did Elise even have screen time this week? She was listed in the IMDb credits. Why was she in the IMDb credits if not on screen? Maybe because of the Google reference would be my guess, right?
Yes, I think so too.
Okay. Liz still protecting Tom from Red in a car conversation. She took the blame and didn't throw Tom under the bus. That was an interesting point. She said, yeah, Tom went in and did this whole thing, and I thought Red would be pissed off at Tom. Maybe he will be. Maybe we'll see that next week.
Yes.
Number seven, Dembe, Red, and Glenn are the best.
Yes.
Eight, Red Nose of Dr. Skylar, Kirk are the same, but needs info from Skylar's mom. I don't like that.
Well, she needed to get a hold in touch with them. Maybe it's hard to get in touch with them. I don't know.
Oh, that's true. Okay. Nine, Cooper hitting the key on Aram's keyboard was my favorite scene.
I like it. Here you go. That's it. It's very War Games-ish. Oh, right. That's it. He's dead. So
don't let Cooper near the nuclear football.
That's right. Don't let him near Whopper. We're in trouble. And then Julie Wright adds, well, what can we say about that? Overall, I enjoyed the episode, but really such little screen time with Reddington has me baffled. He is the main character, and he's had very little in season four so far, and frankly, I'm disappointed. Regardless, they are really drawing out the daddy thing. The scene in the car with Red and Lizzie and the dialogue was almost verbatim from scenes in season one. Red holds Liz and tells her everything is going to be okay. Same wording Liz used to describe what a parent's job, Liz for Agnes. And there's also the similarities with Kate May and Katerina. Poor Red looks helpless. Anyhow, clearly going down the Red is bio dad again. Couple this with the promo for next week, DNA test. We have to believe it, right? I don't see these writers are all over the place and it's getting too much. And while I'm on a rant, only now 4 years in is there a mention of DNA, to coin a phrase of Mr. H. Simpson. Don't.
Yeah. DNA test should have been done a long time ago.
Yes. But they kind of addressed it, didn't they? They just said, I'm not your father. And I think, I don't know, who knows?
Well, and they said that they don't have his DNA on file either. I think back in season one, very early on. So even if they had a DNA test, how are they going to match it up?
Yeah, they only had him. They only had him a couple of times. So
right.
He's only been shot almost dead twice, yeah, once.
You can't take a cotton swab. I mean, Solomon at least took a cotton swab of Lizzie's blood from the car.
Yes.
You can't get any blood from Reddington while he was shot in season two.
Exactly. It's a bleeping FBI. They can get dust off of the moon from here without going there. So, you know, who knows? So.
All right. TC said, first note, Glenn. Classic Glenn in this episode. Such a breath of fresh air and comedy relief. Really great Blacklister this week. Something that very much applies to our current times, right? Although the Blacklister was more of a backstory, which tends to be the trend nowadays, really enjoyed it. Notice that Lizzie also didn't mention her contact with Kirk to anyone at the post office. Trust issues, maybe?
Yes.
I really thought Lizzie could accomplish her plan and deceive Kirk until Tom tried taking things into his own hands. Lizzie is looking to secure a future for her, Agnes, and Tom. Tom is trying to do the same, but he is simply going behind Lizzie's back and not trusting her plans, which might be tearing apart what Lizzie has been trying to build. He's actually pushing Lizzie back to Red, as it appears. On a side note, Tom has to be smarter and know that Kirk was setting them up if they tried to trace Agnes's location. Meanwhile, Kirk's intentions being put to the test. He knows Agnes is the most important thing in Lizzie's life, and now what might be the only chance he has to survive is to harm her. I think if he does bypass the opportunity Agnes presents, he may truly be all in on convincing Lizzie of his intentions to be together, quote-unquote, as her father.
Right? Yes.
The Blacklister planned for everything, but he sure as hell didn't plan for Cooper to be so quick to kill him. That was a great scene showing Cooper will do what needs to be done as always. Post office drama with Aram and Samar, long overdue. Aram turning on Samar. You can only be nice to someone for so long. P.S. Does anyone else get that vibe that Kaplan may be in danger with this wilderness guy? He just gives me the creeps. You don't chain someone up if you're taking care of them, right?
Ta-da! Yes.
And P.P.S. she says the kid was adorable.
That was a really good post. So then Alexandra adds, oh, one of those episodes. Something was off for me. I'm guessing it was the directing, the way it's shot. I'm not sure on the filmmaking terminology. Since the lines were good, the actors same as always, but the spark wasn't there. The plot sucked. The Blacklister was transparent. And seriously, all that for a doctor? There had to be a simpler way. There wasn't enough Red. Aram went back a season or two in terms of character growth. Remember when he got mad about Samir sleeping with Wrestler and screwed Liz over to punish Samir? Yeah. And this time I decided it was good with Kaplan being dead, because the 30 seconds per episode of her creepy guy, of her and creepy guy, were just awful. What? Bright side. Liz is consistently not annoying, which is nice. She even has awesome moments opening up to Red at the end and the plan to cheat Kirk. For once, they made her mad at somebody other than Red, which is amazing. Tom is just perfectly lost in his new feeling of being a good guy for his kid. And he made the classic good guy mistake. Nice. Red apologizing to Jellybean and Red talking to the kid's mom? A heart symbol. And Dembe's advice on bowling. Got soft Samar back, and Wrestler even made a joke. Who would have thought that? That's awesome. It's not great they're saving the Liz Red and Liz Cooper conversations for another day for after finding Agnes, which will take them half a season. At this point, we have to accept that half a season storyline. Overall, it had nice moments, I guess. I'm curious what you guys think.
Yeah, I think people are split on this episode. Seems like it was, like you said, just a setup episode in order to drive future content. The thing that really bugs me so far this season is the Cooper and Liz conversation, and said, The only reason that that hasn't happened is because Cooper was in on it, so it doesn't need to happen.
Correct.
There's your out writing room.
There is your out. So they can take it out, or they can also, you know, not, I don't want to say not be there, but not go there. So.
Yeah. No, thanks so much again, guys, for writing in. Love hearing your thoughts and theories on the episode. I think that'll do it this week, unless you have anything else, Chris.
No, I think we're good. So that will conclude this episode. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at the Blacklist GSM, where we live tweet during the East Coast feed, and we use the show's hashtag The Blacklist.
Yeah, don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram, and also join our Facebook group. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed, talk about the show, the podcast, or share gardening tips. That'd be great.
That would be awesome. You can also subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Please, if you're loving the podcast, leave us a review and tell us that you love Aaron so he comes back from the cabin, or listen from the website. But if you really are on the go, make sure you download our app for iOS and Android powered by Spreaker. You will also find all the intel and analysis about this episode for Gaia by visiting theblacklistexposed.com.
Big thanks to Chris for filling in this week. Let him know in the Facebook group how he did. And to let Aaron know, apparently, any dum-dum can fill the seat.
Hey, don't insult dum-dums like that. Big thanks for listening, guys. Don't forget to answer our profiling question for next week. What will happen to Kaplan in the cabin with a K?
Yes, we will. Thanks so much, guys. We'll see you next week. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at @H_Outsider. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.